Welcome to the Body Beauty Show, a podcast brought to you by CryoSkin, the solution for non-invasive body contouring. This show is devoted to diving deep into the minds of the brightest builders of beauty and wellness businesses on earth to learn how they did it, what they learned along the way, what they would do differently if they were to do it all over again, and where they see the future heading. My name is Austin Evans, and I am your host. Let's get started.
All right, back for another episode of the Body Beauty Show. Today we have special guests, maybe the most special to date. I am optimistic. I think it'll prove to be the case. Perry and Star Nixdorf, I hope I'm saying that right, from Paradise in Carson City, Nevada, co-owners of Paradise and Spear Me. Thanks for jumping on the show. How are the both of you?
We're great.
Yeah, I'm great too.
Okay, the show's done. Beautiful. Great talk. Oh, I love it. Well, okay, so part of the reason why I was fascinated by you guys and invited you to join the show is, well, there's a thousand reasons. But the first is that, you know, as I was looking at your menu for Paradise, you guys have an eclectic menu of services that you offer. But before I get ahead of myself and get into all that, why don't we start with how you guys came to be, a bit of your backstory, the genesis of Paradise, the name, which is incredible, by the way, and a bit of how you got to where you are today and what you do to start.
All right, that sounds good. I've been in this industry for over 42 years. My family has been in this industry for four generations, so it's sort of in my blood to be in this industry. When I was young, I never wanted to be a hairdresser. That was exactly the opposite of everything, because at the time, my family had a salon where we had weekly sets, and I did the towels, and everybody was old, and I was young, and it was like, oh, there's no way I'm going to do this. However, about the time I was 17, my parents built a whole new salon in Carson City here, and it catered to a whole different audience. And that, as a 17-year-old child, was very enlightening. And I thought, wow, this might be something for me. And so then I went to beauty school and ended up in Sacramento because I didn't want to work for my parents. So I worked in Sacramento for a little while, got some training from somebody that was a Redken expert at the time. And I felt I got a really solid education that's been doing me well ever since, right? Worked in LA for a little bit, and then my parents got divorced, and so we ended up coming up here and helping out, and we've been here ever since, 42 years now. Our first salon that we got was a 600-square-foot, four-chair salon. We were in that one for, I don't know, a couple of years and moved. It was in a mall, an old mall that looked like a train station, kind of a very depressing mall. But hey, it was what it was. So we moved down the mall a little bit and we got, I don't know what it was, 1,200 square feet, something like that.
10 chairs.
And we sort of expanded from there. And unfortunately, the mall never really was successful. So they ended up tearing it down. And so we moved to another salon where we went in another location, 900 square feet, four chairs. We incorporated body piercing into it just a few years prior to moving. And so that became the Hair Studio and Spear Me Show for us. And right. So eventually the Spear Me took over and we were never Hair Studio after that. We ended up being Spear Me, because it was a much more clever name and nobody wanted to say they were going to Hair Studio. Everybody wanted to go to Spear Me. So we did that for 12 years. And then when we decided that at that time, the industry was changing, had changed, and I was a relic at that point in time, I felt. So it was either get with the program and come into a modern era as far as our culture is concerned, or retire. So we decided that we would come up into a modern era, and we went from an employment type salon to a booth rental salon plus what we have. Now we have 7,200 and 60 square feet that incorporates a hair salon, a body piercing salon. We have nails. We do massage. We do water exercise. We do skin. We cover everything. Yeah. And that's kind of our story. Star's story is a little bit different because her story was more parallel. That's kind of like my story until we got to Paradise. And that's when we integrated our lives and put her passion into a building with my passion. Right. And now we have a building that that is ours and our passion. So I'll let Star tell her story.
Okay. So this is perfect because you're the Body Beauty Show and you just heard from the beauty side. I'm the body side. 1991 is when my passion for fitness and wellness really hit full stride. And I was working at a place called Dave's Power Palace. Think about that for 2 seconds. What do you think you see in Dave's Power Palace? Power lifters. So I was working out at Dave's Power Palace back in 91. I could do a 360-pound leg press. I was beastly.
You were shredded.
Super strong. Yeah. In 1991, we were moving out of that mall. They tore it down, the Silver City Mall that we were talking about, the train station mall. And we were moving into our new salon. Well, while we were moving, I broke my back. One of those freak accidents broke my L4 and my L5 falling. It took me 5 years to find a way to heal my body. And it was Pilates that did it, a reformer machine and Pilates. So from 1999 to 2005, I was very limited on what I could do because of that injury. But after discovering a way to fix that, breaking your back is no fun, by the way. Then I became a Pilates reformer disciple or nut job, whatever you want to call it. And I got certified to train. I got my AFA certification with the Aerobic and Fitness Association of America. I got certified as a group instructor, reformer instructor, yoga instructor. It's kind of like this big, now that I'm changing my profession, I went and got every certification that I could find. And over, I don't know, from like that 2005 moment to 2013, I was teaching at a lot of different gyms all over Carson City. So you're kind of vagabonding in and out constantly from one gym to the next to teach your classes. And in 2013, we bought this building, Paradise. And guess what? It had therapy pools in it. To me, I'm like, well, we could cover it and we could put some reformers on top of that swimming pool. And this man next to me right here, this husband of mine, he says, wait a minute, it's a pool. So 2013, I went back to school and got certified as an aquatic rehab trainer. And I guess because of my own injuries, I've always focused on that healing style of exercise. I'm not the 400 pound heavy powerlifting stuff that I loved in 1991. That is just not it in my world anymore. But I can talk that language and I can understand it. In the water, we're always working against the buoyancy. Like on land, you're working against gravity. But in the water, you've got many different forces, resistance, buoyancy, hydrostatic pressure, turbulence. That modality was something completely foreign to me. So now it's kind of my, did you know, because it's changed so much in the way that I approach helping people move better and have better lives. So that's kind of my history and why I'm doing what I'm doing.
I got to ask, so you, thank you for sharing that, by the way. You dropped the did you know? So I'm curious, are you privy to who Sam Horn is? Have you heard of Sam Horn?
No.
She's an expert in intrigue. Interesting. Okay. So she's big on the formula of did you know? And you said that you have found your did you know, which you share with your customers to help them, you know, address whatever ailments plague them. And for you, the pool is the answer because you found relief yourself in your journey in the water. And so now you're sharing that with the world, which is, I think, how a lot of passions are spawned. Is they have, you know, the individual has some sort of challenge with their own life. They find a solution and I need to share it with the world. And then boom, you have a business, hair salon, spa, et cetera, et cetera. It's very cool. So you guys have been in this universe for a while, a long time. I think, Perry, you mentioned 42 years to be exact since the date of inception. I mean, is that roughly
actually, I think in 3 weeks here or 10 days, it'll be 44 years.
Wow. So you're, dare I say, a near historian of the industry as well. And you've seen a lot of the changes that have come and gone and fads and trends and the rest of it. And I think, you know, before we get into where we see the industry headed, I think one of the most reliable ways to get some sort of semblance of an idea as to where an industry is heading or history is heading is to look at history and see how evolution has unfolded. So I'd be curious to hear a bit about how you've seen the industry evolve, what some of those big landmarks of change were, if there were any that stand out, like, oh my God, in the 90s, this thing was the rave, the craze, whatever. Because that'll help us get an idea of where we're going, I think.
I think you're right. There's obviously been tremendous change. When I first got in this industry, we were primarily a business where we had an employer and an employee. That was 95% of the salons were that way. Now it's more like 99% of the salons all have independent contractors, and there's a few people out there that are still trying to do the employee employment thing. Primarily, those have become the supercuts, creative cuts, that kind of a scenario, right? And that has dramatically influenced the way that people approach this business. In the past, I would go to a beauty school. I would do a class at the beauty school. People would go, oh, Perry, you're so wonderful because you know so much. And then they would come in and they'd apply for a job. And I'd say, okay, that's fantastic. Let's hire you. And then we'll go through this training process and we'll make you a great hairdresser because everybody wants to be a great hairdresser at the time. And it was in the salon's interest to produce good hairdressers that would do the type of work that that salon wanted to do. So if I invested time with a staff member, they would then produce income and I would take a percentage of that. So the better I did and the more capable I made that person, the better my income was. That, of course, is now significantly different. Now you have an industry that is all independent contractors, and I, as a salon owner, really could care less whether or not that person does a good job or not, except that they have to do a good job to stay in my industry, right? To stay, to work for me, but I won't invest time with them in order to make them good. Now, I have a really nice salon now. That was part of my transformation, was if I wanted to attract good quality hairdressers, I had to have a beautiful salon, a place where people that had the skill sets really wanted to work. So we have a beautiful salon. I charge the most rent of anybody in the industry, and I have been full since day one. I have never had any turnover in the last 7 years. So that speaks to that philosophy, right? So I have what I wanted, but I got it in a completely different way than I thought I was going to get it back in the 90s when I first got started. In 2008, when we had this economic crash, there was a big shift in the way that hairdressers started approaching their job. Many of them went to part-time, and they stayed part-time. There are not a lot of hairdressers that I'm aware of that really want to be full-time and work the industry to be the best that they can be. Now, don't get me wrong, there are still plenty of people out there doing that. But as a whole, most of my staff, even though they pay tremendous amounts of rent, and I don't discount it for part-time work, they pay full-time price, they work part-time. They have family lives. Their work-life balance has changed tremendously in how they feel about it. When I first got in the industry, we were all very work-focused. We would work long hours, and we would do things to motivate us and go to hair shows and do mannequins and create stuff and pictures and all that stuff. As a salon, we would do this. Now, what you have is you have individuals who are creating pictures and with their phones and putting it on Instagram and hoping to be an individual success with their Instagram account. But by and large, the average person working for me and my friends that are in the industry, they're pretty part-time. So that's not a bad thing. It just is something that we work with. And for that, they have a nice work balance. They care about their kids. They're not as focused as I was when I was beginning this industry. I was pretty business focused, and I often neglected that work-life balance. So they find it very important, and that's not a bad thing. So that has shifted dramatically over the course of time. Now, what I noticed, I kept trying to work as the industry was shifting. I was very focused on still maintaining a employer employment salon. I always felt that I could build that business. I could find those people. We could share. We could create that team, and everything would be wonderful. But that isn't the type of people that started applying for work, right? These were people that were looking to better their lives because their lives weren't in good shape at that time. And those were tough choices to make, to bring that person into a capacity to do high-end work for the clients that we were doing. So I struggled and was ultimately failing in this industry at that point. And that's when we decided in 2013 to make that shift and embrace the booth rental thing. I didn't want to be the salon that relied 100% on hairdresser income. So that's one of the reasons that we have a diverse income here, so that if one or another part of my business isn't doing as well as another part, I have a compensating factor. So my income level is more stable because I have diversity rather than being in a single focused, like a salon with 10 hairdressers, you make, you know, whatever you get for rent and that's all you get, right? If you have a walkout on you because for some reason you pissed a few people off, you know, all of a sudden there you are, broke, right? Can't pay the rent and looking for somebody to rent your stations. So I didn't want to be in that. So that's why we have the building that we have and the business model that we have.
It's really interesting. Do you have something to add to that, Star?
I do.
I don't want to chop you off.
That's okay. You know, for an observer, okay, I'm not a hairdresser. I'm not the person doing the hair, but I'm watching the shift in the mindset of our business. So another background that I have is accounting. I went to university, took my accounting courses, you know, walked the stage of our local community college, got my business certificate, business degree, da 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 da. So the feeling is you start seeing people not. I want to say not taking it seriously, but also there's the feeling that you train somebody up, someone who does take it seriously, and you spend a lot of energy. So they don't even realize the thousands of dollars that went out in professional insurance or in the billboard that's on the front of the building, the liability insurance for a person who slips and falls in your doorway. They have no idea that you've spent thousands and thousands of dollars keeping your doors open, or that there was $4,000 that went out on a telephone book ad or a radio or whatever. But they start making $2,000 a week and they look at this and they think, oh my God, I want to keep all that money myself. So their attitude is kind of like, hey, you're ripping me off. And they don't understand how many dollars had to go out to keep the business afloat for that. So that's just on the beauty salon side. Body-wise, I've seen a lot of changes in the way people approach their workouts. Maybe you would call this the Google generation, because they don't need your professional info. They don't need you as a personal trainer anymore. They can get on YouTube.
Star, you're wrong. Oh. I read on WebMD that I don't need to do push-ups and pull-ups. I could just get on this. I could buy my shake weights and do, 30 minutes a day, and I'm going to have a six-pack.
Yes, and drink that, protein powder for two meals of your day, and take your little supplement pills that you paid $179 a month for, and you're going to lose the weight you want to lose. Why do you need anybody's assistance? So the feeling is that you're not as important anymore as a personal trainer. For the knowledge that you have becomes less valuable because a person can do it themselves. You just basically see a total shift away from expert-based, why would someone pay me for my time as a personal trainer? And then, the COVID-19 and all the stuff that we're going through right now is putting a lot more focus on people working out in their own living room, taking a hike in the woods, that kind of thing. So those are the changes that I see in the fitness industry. And as a personal trainer, I'm also not seeing brochures coming in the mail from symposiums. I'm not getting much, there's not much out there anymore because they're putting it all online, right? And then you might get a postcard, you'll get an email. They are definitely shifting to social media for telling you about what's going on with a different ACE or NASM or AFA or ATRI or AEA. Any of these organizations have put the majority of their energy now to another venue, right? It's going online.
So Perry, you mentioned that the model changed from being an employer-employee relationship to what is now essentially, I don't want to say a landlord. I don't know how you would categorically refer to that, but something like a landlord to independent contractor. Mm-hmm. Is that a roughly accurate characterization of the shift that's happened on the salon side?
Yes.
With respect to the building itself. Okay. Which I think is genius, by the way. Like you mentioned, it allows you to diversify your income. You're a lot more anti-fragile because you're not dependent on... It provides multiplicity of streams of income, which is great. It sounds a lot like house hacking, where you essentially, you get a big, beautiful location like you guys have now, which is, you said, it's 7,000 plus feet. It's the size of Costco. It's huge. 500 chairs. Everybody, their mom wants to work there because it's the most beautiful salon in town. And the way you can pull that off is that you have people renting booths from you and everybody wins. But to what you were saying, I believe Star, you were saying that they don't see all the expenses that go in on the back end to mow the lawn, to keep the lights on, to pay for the billboard out front that gets people through the doors and ultimately in their chairs that they benefit from. So it's a very symbiotic change, it seems like, which is why you see the rise of these solo salons, Phoenix Salon Suites, etc. So it seems like part of this change is almost real estate-esque in the way that we've enabled stylists to preserve autonomy by being their own boss, without assuming all the headaches that you have to deal with paying for the building, the lease, maintenance, upkeep, keeping the lights on, the rest of it. So I would imagine that has produced a positive change, at least for you and your business, for the both of you.
Correct. For me, that has. But for the industry, it's very troubling, in my opinion, because it takes away the ramp from beauty school into the industry. You have someone who comes out of beauty school and their options are rent a booth, and they're not going to go out and rent a $500,000 station, whatever, you know, their market is. They're going to find the lowest level possible. So they're going to be in a salon that can afford to keep their rents low, right? So at that point, is that the type of salon that's going to feed them customers? Is that industry, is the person who owns that salon going to care enough about that person's education to help them build their clientele? Does that person have enough money to go to hair shows, especially not at COVID-19, right? So the ramp up into becoming a great hairdresser is much harder for a new person now, in my opinion. Many of them are opting for the Creative Cuts, Super Cuts, Fantastic Sams, that type of scenario, because they need a paycheck, and they get a paycheck. They get someone who feeds them customers, gives them some education. And so that's their business model. It works. There will be people that will go that path, but a person who wants to go and work for me in the future, their path is a lot more difficult. Not impossible, because there are salons that do more of a blended approach, right? Where they have some employees that they build up or try to build up, and then eventually that person starts renting in that station. And, you know, there are variations on this significantly. There's a lot of variations. But anyway, I think it makes it difficult in the industry for a new person coming into the industry at being successful, much more difficult than it was in the past. And so while it benefits me, and I have a bunch of veterans in my store that are all fantastic hairdressers and have a clientele, that new person coming out of beauty school is faced with a pretty daunting task to become successful.
So, Star, drifting back to you, you mentioned that you get the sense that we are moving away from a, how would I put this? It seems like you're saying that people are no longer within personal training prizing expertise because they can just go to Google, they think. Is that about what you said?
Yeah, I see that as an overall ism going on. That's, yeah. You know, there are definitely experts in the field that can demand an excellent rate because they're going to give an epic workout. Now, a lot of that has to do with notoriety and their ability to use social networking to illustrate their popularity. I mean, it really is. Mm. It feels like a very big popularity show when you look at the environment out there.
Yeah.
Not to talk disparagingly about what I do for a living, right? But it is becoming so available for a person, like you were saying, WebMD. They can go to these multi-level marketing companies that have enormous amounts of asset, right? Thousands of workouts, thousands of videos, da 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 da. But if a person, so this is where I have to say, this is where my Ability Fix app is going, because it's going to make it possible for a person to plug into we're creating Ability Fix, and they'll just pop it in, turn it on, and be able to have audio workouts in the pool. Put in a pair of Bluetooth waterproof headphones. They can watch the video instructions, which are about a minute long, and then rock and roll. Go.
And that's in water?
In water.
Wow, that's extremely cool. Yeah. So that was the next question I was going to ask you. Well, there's two actually to that point. So the change that you're seeing is that expertise for personal trainers is effectively being supplanted by what is effectively a beauty show, or rather specifically a popularity contest or social proof. So instead of them trusting the veracity of what you say and advise them to do or instruct them to do whatever, they instead go to your Instagram page and see, oh, she only has X amount of followers, therefore she's not an expert or something like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, that'll be...
I mean, is that the change that's happening?
That's part of the change. And the fact that they can Google it They can look it up for themselves. I mean, we don't even have to walk in and talk to our doctor anymore. We can't tell him.
Yeah, right. I know. Exactly.
And that's much the same problem we're having in this industry. These new hairdressers that we're talking about, when they're sitting there waiting for that client, they're not looking at their salon owner as the expert that's going to help them do something. They get on YouTube and they watch a bunch of YouTube videos on how to do haircuts and color and braids and extensions, and anything you want to know about this industry is on YouTube. And the problem that I've seen is that people watch these videos, but they don't practice them. So unlike an instructor that would say, okay, this is what I want you to do, hold the hair out like this, blah, blah, whatever the instruction is, they watch the person do it, they give them correction, they help them refine their technique, they give them feedback, and so on and so forth. They watch these videos and they go on to right to the next video and to the next video and to the next video, and they never pick up a mannequin and they never do the hair until the client walks in the door and they go, you know, I saw this on YouTube. Let me try it. And then they fail because they didn't quite get it quite right.
Wait, hold on. Let me interrupt you. So you mean to tell me that if I spend 1,000 hours watching John Mayer play guitar, I can't just pick up a guitar and play like John Mayer?
Yeah, unfortunately, I believe that would be true. So,
all right, I quit. I give up.
Yeah, you
I
might as well, because yeah. So anyway, so I think that we have a reliance on our video inputs for our education, but we don't use it in a manner that really gives us a practical application of whatever it is that we're watching. So. That's part of our industry issue as well, in my opinion.
I hear a business opportunity knocking on the door for you guys to start a beauty school where the central tenet is that of Mr. Miyagi. Wax on, wax off. No, you will not watch the next video. You will watch this one video, practice this one thing until you get it. And then I'll allow you to watch the next video and get the next move done.
I only have enough energy for one app at a time. We've been working on this Ability Fix app that we're developing for 3 years. We anticipate launching like early January with it. It's a very, very extensive app. So it's been a long journey and we're pretty close to it. And so once it launches, I got a feeling it's going to take up even more time than it already takes. But so there's only one amount of energy that I can put into electronic media that way.
I totally get it. Well, someone out there in the audience is going to steal the idea and start a beauty school where they pretend to be Mr. Miyagi. Yeah, do it. Yeah, it's one of the things that we constantly talk about is, you know, some of the listeners, of course, are maybe they're employees and they've been itching to start their own business and they just need that little bit of a nudge to go do the thing, to answer the call to adventure that their heart is inviting them to do, but they're afraid because there's risk, there's fear, there's all this anxiety, and sometimes you just need a little bit of a nudge.
Well, think about us. We had a 900 square foot salon and I had 3 employees, and I opened up a 7,266 square foot building that required easily 15 to 16 employees at the time. And that was a bit of risk. Now we're at 22 or 23.
23 associates and staff.
So that was quite the risk at the time.
Can I just tell you that about this time in 2013, construction was underway. Walls were ripped out. The floor was torn out. And it was November 2013. And I was thinking, we should be open by now. Why are we still under construction?
Draining our
banks. Things take time. Right? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's funny how fast the money vanishes, it seems, with projects, right? Well, I'm just going to do a simple remodel in my bathroom $500,000 later. You know, you've dropped the same amount that you paid for your house to have that beautiful tiling and the rest of it. So,
oh yeah,
it happens. It happens.
Absolutely.
Gosh, there is no time and there are so many questions to ask you. We'll have to have you on the show again because we are just scratching the surface. It's not that common that we get what is effectively a master a historian all in the same room virtually to discuss the history and the changes and the rest of it in the industry. So we will certainly have you back on. But
part two, my friend, we can totally do that.
Hey, I say trilogy all the way. Lord of the Rings, The Dark Knight, all the great films of antiquity were trilogies. So we'll have you back for a two formed. And three. Hey, The Matrix, right? Three films in that series as well.
He's a charm.
That's right. And Perry, you are a much more handsome version of Keanu Reeves, I must say. Oh, so,
well, thank you very much.
See, I have good taste.
Hey, I was going to say. Well, speaking of taste, let's do this because I do want to get an idea of what you guys think about what is coming just around the river bend in the industry. I'm hearing things, you're seeing things. So in terms of changes that you see impending, maybe it's looking at, you know, forecasts that are going to piggyback the impact and effect of COVID or whatever. What changes do you see ahead coming in the industry that maybe others aren't seeing or noticing?
That's a tough question.
I like to ask easy questions on the show, Perry. Right. So.
I'll answer. All right, you answer. Okay. So this is going to sound like I'm a real Debbie Downer, but here we go. There's going to be a lot of beauty salons that close. Those beauty salons that don't do a good job for their clients, that didn't have the wherewithal, they're going down. And then you're going to find people with lots of opportunity to walk into a building or a business. We're talking real estate and run with it. Open it up. They got the shampoo bowls already done. You're also going to see that in the restaurant industry. You're going to see that. You're going to see first a whole lot of death and then the opportunity that comes after that. So it might be a couple years down the road that we're talking about right now, but I see because we have the stay in place, the tenacity, we have our history, we have the quality of our services, we're going to survive this. And there'll be lots of opportunity.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. A lot of us in this industry, including myself for many, many years, live month to month. And there isn't enough money in this industry running a booth rental situation to really provide a significant cushion for many salons, in my opinion. So those people are going to go by the wayside once the PPP money goes away and, you know, all this stuff, we're going to see some death of the industry. That's not all a bad thing because there's a lot of salons out there with a lot of empty chairs. So those salons that do have some resources, they'll be available for those hairdressers to go to. So the hairdresser themselves will have an opportunity to find places and continue to do business. So I don't think there's going to be fewer hairdressers. There just might be fewer salons in general. And I don't necessarily think that that's a bad thing for our industry. Where it goes from there, it'll be tough to know. We obviously know that we're going to be much more digital. We're going to attend more digital events. COVID has really done this for us. They've forced us into a situation where we have to rethink how we attend our events, like the IBS show, for instance, right? Can we visit a major hair show digitally? Can we get the same value out of it? Can I get the same feeling? I mean, I love going to hair shows. It's a great time, right? But will I get that same value from doing it digitally? Well, probably not, because I enjoy seeing people, meeting people, going to the bars afterwards, meeting like-minded people, talking with industry professionals. You know, there's so much that happens socially and within that zone that can't be duplicated digitally. But something will occur. Somebody will create a something that will try to replicate that to some degree and maybe give us some satisfaction. So we'll get an education, learn about hair, learn about the latest products and so on in a different way. And some of that will stick in the future and some of it won't, right? Once we can go back to being 50,000 people in a convention center, that'll be great, right? But some things will obviously last and endure. And digital education is going to be one of those things for sure. So I hope we figure out a way to do teams a little bit better. I hope that we as a group can learn to work together in a team format versus the Instagram model, which is I am my own success story, and everyone's working to their own success versus the team model. But that's a personal thing on my part. Anyway.
Wow. Well, look, we are 50 minutes in, and we have covered 1% of 1% of what I wanted to talk to you guys about today. We will do a damn trilogy.
I am so glad you find us entertaining and informative enough to believe that.
Hey, it's truth. It is truth. Yeah. Well, look, usually we wrap the show with the levers and landmines section where we talk about, the biggest things that you've done that have had the best or worst effects on the business. We don't have the time really to get into that unless you have something quick that you wanted to say, because I think what the listeners really would love to know as a closing note, unless you have something you want to interject, please do. Otherwise, we'll get to it on show two. I think the listeners want to know, as Star bounces her eyebrows in a celebratory dance, it seems like. Maybe she's just playing eye games with me. Anyway, I think the listeners want to know, how in the hell have you guys managed to both stay married and work together all these years? What is the secret? How have you pulled that off? We got to know.
Oh, do you want to know about all the dead bodies?
Or are we all... We're not going to go digging in your backyard.
We're going to open up the closets and look for the skeletons. No.
hey, Siri, call the FBI. No.
In one word, it's communication. It's the ability to communicate and express what's on our minds with the other person not judging. Too many times you see people who communicate on one side and the other person rolls their eyes and says, oh, really? Again, honey, whatever. They make some sort of judgment on the communication. And when you do that, it prevents the other person from really wanting to reach out and communicate.
Now
again,
he has no reason to do a trilogy. Right? You gave him all the
secrets. Yeah.
Where's the suspense, Perry? Come on, play hard again. Don't give it all to me.
Right. So ultimately, Star and I have a great communication. We don't see each other most of the day. She's off in the pool. I'm in the salon. The building is big enough that we run into each other and go, hey, how are you doing? I'm fine. Okay.
Who are you again? Oh, I got to go home with you. Oh, my God.
Right. So it isn't like we're working side by side either. So there is something at the end of the day for us to communicate about, because we didn't live side by side. So anyway, it's been really good. We have how long we've been married now?
39 years.
Yeah. And wow.
We were engaged for 8 months before that, by the way. Okay. So
anyway, we've made it work. I would say that communication without judgment is the key.
Okay.
Yeah.
And I have one more in. You gotta be having a good time. You have to have fun. If you can't play, if you can't be married for 39 years and still play, then, kick it. But in the meantime, we're having a great time. We play.
Yep.
I'm going to take all that. I'm going to distill it down into what I hope will be one entirely non-convoluted with maybe three commas at most, maybe a semicolon. Let's see. Sentence. Okay. Principle of charity, meaning detached from judgment and the tendency towards judgment, conjoined with radical authenticity, speaking your truth, comma, have fun, period.
That would be correct.
Did I get it right?
That is correct.
Yeah.
Holy moly, ladies and gentlemen, if you are married and in business with your lover, partner in crime, or side lover, I do not recommend telling your main lover. You should probably get out of that relationship if that is you. But hey, if you need advice on how to pull this off, I'm sure Perry and Star might entertain giving you their ear, but they're busy. So good luck. They are running a busy, busy, busy establishment. And on that note, we are out of time. So let's pull the chalks and bump back into our each respective coal mines, sandboxes, and the rest of it. You guys have been amazing. We'll have you on again. And that's it. So thanks again. Sorry, real quick, plug for you. Where can our listeners find and connect with you? Maybe if they're in the neck of the woods that you're in or otherwise.
Paradise SalonSpaWellness.com.
AbilityFix.com. AbilityFix.com.
That's where you can find us. You can connect with us, find all of our social stuff. And, you know, that's central spot.
Beautiful. Love it. Thanks again, guys, for stopping in. All the best. We will catch you for round two down the line.
Thank you for having us. It was great.
Thank you, Austin.
Of course. Bye-bye. If you're looking for the latest in body contouring technology, check out cryoskin.com to learn more about how we're helping beauty and wellness business owners take their business to the next level without the cost and commitments of other products in the market. Connect again with us at cryoskin.com. Thanks for listening.